This is the podcast for September 21st, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Mitt Romney's Mexican Heritage Self-Deportation Cantina, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Recorded live from just outside Mitt Romney's Mexican Heritage Self-Deportation Cantina, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
God damn you, Blue Gal.
All right.
That was perfect.
No, it wasn't.
It was better than my Romney
Whatever.
Screws.
Self.
Hey, bite me. I got 47% of those words correct, so screw you.
What happened to Mitt Romney with his Boehner makeup?
Yeah, that was beautiful, man.
Over at the Hispanic TV show.
Yeah,
that was scary looking. I'm going to Photoshop that into something.
Strap on a beard, and that's the least interesting man in the world. Stay stupid, my friend. Because really, honest to God, ask your conservative friends, how stupid do you have to be to vote for this guy now? Really?
Well, I know.
How fucking stupid do you have to talk about the secret tape. Well, the Barack Obama has two secret tapes now.
Well, I know. They keep digging up stuff from the 80s and saying it's a secret tape.
Here's him dancing to Mr. Mister. You know, he said... Diamond dogs are poachers and they live behind trees.
See?
That's David Bowie. No, that's communism. That's communist code for taking away diamond dogs. He's referring to rich people and how he hates them.
It's class warfare.
And this is the interesting thing about, I mean, everybody knows about the secret tapes of Mitt Romney by this point.
Right.
And many people know that the Republicans are desperately hauling all the stuff they had in their secret attack vault. You know, that we've been stockpiling this for the day when it would be awesome. And it's just pathetic. It's Barack Obama. If you play the whole tape, it's Barack Obama talking about making government run more efficiently. Because I believe in pooling resources and using them efficiently and holding government programs to account and making them run efficiently and using marketplace pressures to essentially make things run better. Which sounds a shitload like every Republican I've heard up until, let's say, the last 2 years. It sounds like cap-and-trade Republicans.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know.
And his part about the redistribution of wealth was, yeah, I believe in a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be some people who have nothing and people who have billions. And, yeah, I kind of sort of believe in a little bit of that.
Every time you take a dollar out of my pocket to spend on something I don't personally approve of or doesn't benefit me, that's redistribution. It's called taxation.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that, and this is where it gets really fascinating. His other tape was, and I'm sure it'll be a little more prominent over the next few days as liberals discover that Sean Hannity and Michelle Malkin were just seething over. And it was approximately the same period of time, maybe a little earlier. And Barack Obama was talking about the common good, how we should all sit around a table and how we should, you know, we can control our own fates and how we should bring everyone to the table and how he believed in democracy with a little D and the common fucking good. And we all know what that means, don't we, Michelle? And first of all,
wow,
I got to say, you know, hat tip to the right, because if you listen to the people who are asking questions at the Mitt Romney hot mic of death, you know, show. This is where Lawrence O'Donnell got this exactly right. The rich, rich, rich guys in the room are every bit as bigoted and stupid as the base.
Yep.
Being rich doesn't make you smart. It just means you're obsessed with aggregating wealth. And the
hoarding money. Yeah,
hoarding money.
Absolutely.
And the rich assholes in the room are even more bought into the idea that we are the makers, man. We are the John fucking Galt of this planet. And everyone else is a moocher who's out to steal my gold. They're out to steal my gold. They want to take my gold away from me. My precious. My precious. And that's who they are. That really is who they are. And the basis and the genius of the Republican Party has been to convince a lot of poor, dumb hicks from Sister Fuck Arkansas that voting away their benefits and voting for tax cuts for rich people who fuck them over is actually in their best interest because, you know, freedom. And that's
well, and because those people, and that's what I wanted to talk about today, is that, you know, the fact of what Mitt Romney said is much less important electorally than the optics of it, because what he said, anyone who is in the Tea Party automatically believes that they are overtaxed, no matter whether they pay income taxes or not. They are overtaxed. And you would never tell It's like, I know you've been on phone calls with customers and clients and so forth. Yep. You never tell someone they're not busy. Everyone is busy.
Yes.
Everyone is overtaxed. If you're not busy, you're not important. If you're not overtaxed, you're not a contributing member of society. And you would never insult somebody by saying you're undertaxed or you pay no taxes. No one believes that about themselves.
Right. Everyone's
above that. That's a bad thing. You're a middle class person. You of course you pay your taxes. And so the people that are in the Tea Party that are lower class people probably don't pay taxes, income taxes, because they don't make enough money to pay taxes.
Yeah. Or they're on retirement or they're on Social Security.
Right, right. But they cannot believe in their psyches that they are not overtaxed.
Right.
Because if they do, then they are claiming that they are not Americans. Of course we're overtaxed. We're Americans. And so they stand alongside Mitt Romney against those people who don't pay taxes. And this goes back to Joan Walsh's book. You know, I interviewed Joan Walsh about what's the matter with white people. Is if you can convince them that it's those people over there, and it's easy to do that when the president is one of those people in their heads.
In many different ways.
In many different ways.
He's an urban guy. Mm-hmm. He's a Democrat. He's an elitist who went to Harvard and taught at college. Yeah. And he's a Negro. Yeah. I mean, every bad thing. He's every nightmare that Archie Bunker ever had rolled up into one.
And that's the part that got me about this is Mitt Romney talking about the 47% who would never vote for him. And then there's the 47% who will never vote for anyone else.
Right.
Regardless of class, regardless of education, regardless of anything, they cannot bring themselves. I mean, there were people in West Virginia who voted for a convict in prison rather than vote for Barack Obama.
Yeah, because it is committing a sort of a philosophical suicide.
Exactly. They're killing what they believe about themselves.
Well, and the subtext, this week should be entitled Even David Brooks Week.
Yeah. Well, and someone at Coast said, I don't want to write an Even David Brooks diary.
Yeah. Yeah, it hurts.
But you did, and I really felt, Drift Glass, that you were validated this week when every single show on MSNBC said
everyone,
even David Brooks,
and today too,
Mitt Romney screwed the pooch. Every single show,
ever since,
even David Brooks,
even the conservative, even the smart, I mean, Chris Matthews, even that very smart David Brooks, even the conservative David Brooks.
Jennifer Rubin says David Brooks is in the center, Drift Glass.
Yeah, yeah. And Michelle Malkin says he's a
traitor.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the part. Again, this is we talk about what's broken. Mm-hmm. On this podcast, we try to talk a split evenly, I think, between the symptoms and the disease. Mm-hmm. And the symptom is Michelle Malkin. The symptom is David Brooks. The disease is something that's fundamentally broken in our media. And there's certain things you're simply not allowed to talk about, even though everyone knows they're true. And the thing that we're not allowed to talk about is that the subtext of David Brooks, and this is where I wrote that the most deeply conservative aspect of David Brooks and people like him is that they can never admit they were wrong, ever, under any circumstances. They will not admit that they got it wrong, that they wrote it wrong. And worse still, they can never admit liberals are right. And what I did was, you know, David Brooks wrote this excoriating column about the perception that Mitt Romney creates when he says things like this. And the very last paragraph, he says, you know, I'm sure he's a very nice guy and we really need his reforms, but the incompetence of his campaign is getting in the way of all this. And if you hop back to 2003, 4, 5, 6, you'll find David Brooks saying the Iraq War was not a bad idea. The principles behind the Iraq War were lovely, and I stand behind them. It was the incompetence of Donald Rumsfeld during one week in May. That's what the problem was. The problem with Paul Wolfowitz isn't that he's an asshole and a jerk and a neoconservative. The problem is his critics are all anti-Semitic bastards. The problem with Scooter Libby isn't that he's a criminal and a traitor. The problem is he's a very nice guy who stood up for his boss, and he even paid for his own lunch, for God's sakes. David Brooks can't admit, because the day he does, he loses his job.
Well, the day he does, he's also committing suicide the way that Tea Party people commit suicide by admitting they're not taxed enough.
Right.
Or that they don't pay taxes. Let's put it that way. I don't mean they're not taxed enough. They're poor. And they can't admit they're poor. They have to be middle class, and they have to be, you know, overtaxed.
Righteous, and patriotic.
And David Brooks has to be right about Iraq and has to be right about Scooter Libby and like everybody that's on his side.
And has to be right about the Bush tax cuts. And has to be right that the Obama stimulus failed. Every one of the major theses of his writing, going back to his days as a hack for Bill Kristol at the Weekly Standard, he's been wrong. And he's been stridently wrong. And he used to be a much more vitriolic, bomb-throwing conservative hack. And
when
then
that's
everything
paid the bills. Yeah.
That's what paid the bill. And then New York Times picked up the tab for him. And suddenly all of his ideas that he was pimping during the Bush administration all fell apart.
Is that like being an Etch-a-Sketch?
Well, it's he took his Etch-a-Sketching and he made a brilliant career decision that wouldn't have been possible if the New York Times didn't keep paying him to lie on the editorial page, which is he became the arbiter of the center. Yeah. He became the new David Broder. He is the arbiter of what reasonable people who are center or center right should believe. And by becoming the high priest of the village, he has immunized himself against anyone criticizing him for being, you know, completely fucking wrong about everything. And nobody, there's one occasion where this happened. I was there. I taped it. I've pimped it 100 times. It never goes anywhere. There is one occasion where David Brooks got caught in public being asked questions about shit he wrote, and he just lied about it. And David Brooks, since that time, as far as I can tell, has made it a hobby, a principle of his, never get caught in an arena where anyone can ask you questions about the shit you said. So he only goes on friendly programs, and everyone strokes him, talks about how wise he is, and then shit like this happens. And then the payday comes, which is, well, I might be a liberal, but even David Brooks says this must be true. And here's a measure of how total the big lie of centrism is.
Right.
Ross Douhat went caught, you know, balls out caught. Mitt Romney, this is the thing, this is the part about the discussion that I want us to get to eventually, because I'm yapping.
He is really the lightest of the intellectual lightweights of the right.
Yes, he is. And yet every week he cashes a paycheck from the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And that is just profoundly disturbing to me. That's how broken our media is. But the thing about what Mitt Romney said is everybody who gets crazy emails from crazy Uncle Liberty and has a file full of them knows this is exactly what the base has always believed.
Yep.
Going back to the John Birch Society, they've always believed this.
That there's a moocher class that wants to take away our money.
There's a moocher, collectivist, Negro, liberal, communist conspiracy to suck up all of our hard-earned money and turn us over to the UN or turn us over to the Islamists or destroy America because we hate America, blah, blah, blah. That is absolute – that is the mother tongue of the base of the conservative movement in this country, and it always has been. And everyone who has been floating along the top, mooching off the conservative movement, living off of wingnut welfare for the last 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years knows it, but they can't say it. Because it scares the shit out of normal people. So what David Brooks and Andrew Sullivan and David Frum and people like that have done for a living is leech off of the energy created by this deep, dark, ugly, racist, Bircher hatred, while at the same time pretending it doesn't exist. It's not there. We don't talk this way. That's crazy. That's a few fringe people far away. That isn't what the party thinks. That isn't what the movement thinks. And then Mitt Romney opens his pie hole and says, confirms every bias, everything every liberal has ever said about the conservatives has now been confirmed by the presidential candidate of the Republican Party. And what can you do when it turns out liberals were right all along if you're Ross Douhat? You write a long column about how both sides do it. Both sides are bad. He can't admit we were right. He can't admit he was wrong. He is a complete flaming hack, and he gets paid to lie. And what do you do when you get caught literally, you know, naked fucking the dog in the backyard? What can you say? What can you possibly say to save your job? And the answer is go find a hippie somewhere and punch them, even if they're imaginary. And that's what Duhat did, and he got away with it, because that's what our media is built on, letting these people get away with shit like this.
I want to get back for a moment to the audience that Mitt Romney was talking to.
Yeah.
And when I heard that the host of that party that he was speaking, at which he was speaking, was also a Boca Raton lover of sex parties and pools full of naked women giving blowjobs underwater and Russian nude women dancing in cages around the pool. And, you know, that's all that salient stuff. I thought, well, of course.
Yeah.
Because this isn't about Republicans, really. This is a subsection of the higher classes of ancient Rome.
Yeah.
That for whom no rules apply whatsoever. We will not pay taxes. We have no morals. We are not family values people. We are about hoarding money and being and telling ourselves lies. That was the one part where I really felt like David Brooks's column did transcend his razor in the apple, was when he said these are lies that millionaires tell each other.
Yes.
And he's right about that. And he used the word lies, and good for him.
He did. He did.
Then there was the razor in the apple, which is, but Mitt Romney's a nice guy. And I love what Wonkette said about something to the effect of, you know, David Brooks can't take Mitt Romney in, but he can't spit it out either.
Yeah.
Because he's too polite, and so he's got to say, well, Mitt Romney's a nice guy, and we really need his reforms and the grand bargain and all of that, but he's screwed it up because his ideas are great. And the person who came out in a series of 10 tweets, I don't know why he decided that that was the way to communicate, but...
Yeah, well, you know, Cosmo does it all the time.
Our favorite Canadian... You want to talk about that? David Frum had a series of 10 tweets in which he said, no, the problem with Mitt Romney, apart from all of these fuck-ups, and he didn't put it that way, of course, is that his policies are abhorrent.
Yes.
And cutting Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare to give tax cuts to millionaires is an abhorrent policy.
Yes.
Good for him.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, and,
good for
but,
him.
But his subsequent, and this reminds me of two things, one of which I want to sort of mental note here.
Okay.
But, you know, it is David Frum's considered opinion that Mitt Romney's problem is he keeps pandering to crazies, you know, conservative talk show hosts.
And that there's a sane conservative wing that he should he should be emulating. Yeah.
David Frum, who was George Bush's speechwriter, goddamn well knows better.
Yeah.
He knows these people are the party. Once you decide to run with an R after your name for any national office, especially president, these are the people you got to suck up to. These are your voters.
The myth of the sane Republican center is something that all of these guys have in common. Absolutely.
And they all lie about it. They all lie about it constantly.
They're lying to each other about it. Yep.
And so he has to, again, it's again, the big lie of centrism. You have to invent a completely fake position, a completely fake populace of reasonable centrists or evil liberals to counterbalance the fact that A, your party is a bunch of religious nut jobs and bigots and morons and plutocrats. And B, you've been a part of it your entire life. You know, oh my God, my party's full of crazy people. Oh my God, how did I not notice this? I don't know, David Frum. I don't know, David Brooks. I don't know, Andrew Sullivan. How did you not notice that? And by the way, here's a group of people over here who've been telling you this is what you are part of for 30 years. I believe the technical term for us used to be cheese-eating surrender monkeys and a hating traitor. So how about you fuckers go get real work somewhere? How about you get your ass fired from your job, which you're clearly incompetent by any standard other than your boss wants you to say these terrible things, and make room for people who don't lie for a living and have been wrong about everything since forever, or who can at least admit it, who can at least admit it. The second thing, this is a little footnote to myself, is I do recall writing a very positive comment, a very positive post about David Brooks many years ago. And it was after Katrina.
Yeah. Because he really did just lose it at that point and say this was a failure.
He said, holy shit, the Bush administration really is staffed with a bunch of political hacks and incompetence. This is inexcusable. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a nice column saying, you know, I write a column the day I agreed with David Brooks about something, I would write and say he got this right. But and I'm not sure if I'm sort of misremembering this because I do this, but I knew in my heart David Brooks, being who he is, would eventually come, pardon my language, Jennifer Rubin, come slithering back to the door, to the GOP. He would find a way. It doesn't matter how badly Mitt Romney has fucked up over the last year and a half, because that's really how long it's been. David Frum has always found a way to write his way back into polishing up his resume in case he ever gets elected. Find a way to vote for him. He's going to find a way to support him because he doesn't have a conscience, because he's a political creature, because he's a hack. But the problem, as I this is what cracked me up when it occurred to me this morning, and pardon me laughing at my own inner voices, is Mitt Romney has a political polygamy problem.
Yes. I love this idea. Go ahead and talk about this.
Has,
this political polygamy, folks.
Political polygamy. He has two sister wives.
Oh, no, I think he has many more than that. But you go ahead. I have a couple to add to the list.
He has many. But the two most pronounced and sharply divided, just for the sake of discussion, are Peggy Noonan and Michelle Malkin. And they hate each other. And they both and Michelle Malkin represents the group I used to call and still do Little Red State Fundy.
Yeah.
The Little Red State Fundy are the crazy, crazy, crazy people who make up the majority of the Republican Party.
And they work boots on the ground. They're the
voters, man.
Yeah.
They stuff the envelopes. They drive old people to the polls. They are the energy, the heart and soul of the GOP, and they have been for 30 years. And of course, the party bosses can't admit that, because then liberals would be right. So, but those people are finally out of the closet. They think the millennium has arrived. Their moment is here. And that Mittens, since he cannot win without them, that it's goddamn time for him to take their shouty cracker ideas and be proud and out about them and move them to the front burner. Fuck yeah, 47% of this country are a bunch of moochers. Say that loud and say it proud, Mitt. There's nothing to be ashamed of by calling out all these communist, secret, sneaky conspirators who've been destroying America and stealing away from good patriots like us. They really believe that, and they really believe Mitt Romney should stand up and say that proudly. And then there's Peggy Noonan, who is terrified of these people, but she can, you know, she has one vote. So she is horrified when she hears people talk honestly about the crazy uncle in the basement. And now we have a problem, because Mitt's trying to seduce both of these women in front of each other.
Yes. And they both want him to be just for them.
And every time they want monogamy, and he wants polygamy.
Yeah.
And every time he says something nice about one of them, the other one writes terrible things about what an awful, traitorous, backstabbing prick he is. And the problem is, of course, this whole scam, the GOP con, only works when you do it all in secret, when you have this camouflage.
Yeah, and you keep everyone, you know, the wife never knows about the mistress. Yeah, absolutely.
And now they're in the same room, and they both have microphones.
Yeah.
And one of them goes on Meet the Press, and one of them goes on Sean Hannity. And and Ron's stuck in the middle, trying to pretend. And that's what happens when you don't have a soul, when you have no conscience, when you're just willing to say anything to anyone, like a CEO, to close the deal. Well, you've made a whole lot of promises, Mitt, to a whole lot of people that all – cancel each other out, but all those people are now talking to each other, and which leads us.
I was going to go down the route of Catherine Jean Lopez and Jennifer Rubin as also being sister wives, and how, you know, Catherine Jean Lopez at National Review Online, for those of you who don't know, is like me, a plus sized political mother of nurturing her side of the base. I mean, she's very mothering to all of the people at NRO. And unlike me, she claims that virginity chose her.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I always, whenever I think, I try to be so nice to her, because I always think when I see her, oh, there but for the grace of God go I. That she is very Catholic. Very anti-abortion, very anti-pornography, clearly, you know, I don't want to be mean, but she sublimates her sex drive with food. I think it's pretty clear.
Safe to say. Mm-hmm.
Safe to say that.
She eats her rage, yeah.
And her lust.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing, that's
let's
sad.
Be clear. There's nothing wrong with being plus size.
No, oh, thank you.
At all. What's... But this is a compare and contrast between this maternal creature who is deeply Catholic and deeply, you know, offended by various things, and Jennifer Rubin.
Yeah, and Jennifer Rubin, who's the mean girl.
Yeah.
She's the thin, mean girl mm-hmm. who will cut a bitch, who will cut mm-hmm. anyone who's in her way, and doesn't mind pulling out that anti-Semite card in a heartbeat.
Oh, drop
to,
of a hat.
To
yeah.
cut anybody who gets in her way. So I was just thinking, when you said Sister Wives, I kind of thought you might be going that route, because Catherine Jean Lopez is deeply in love with Mitt Romney and has been for a couple of years. I mean, mm-hmm. he was her candidate back in 2009. So, and I think it's because he's handsome and a family man and safe. You know, there's this, the good Mormon and the devoted pro-life, anti-sex Catholic can just get along just fine.
Goes together like whips and ball gags.
Yeah. Okay, I have nothing to say to that.
Well, and I didn't want it to be gender specific, because this is, you know, sister wives include, and this is metaphorical, include David Brooks and Ann Coulter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the people on the one side who are, I refer to, at least in our notes, as the adult children of wingnut-holics.
Yeah, yeah, Who are professional and higher class people.
And they're the fixers, and they're trying to shove this enormous turd right back up the party's ass.
This is what happens when John Roberts has to go against Antonin Scalia. It's the same thing. John Roberts voted in favor of Obamacare, I think primarily because he didn't want to be associated with Clarence Thomas and Ginny Thomas and the nasty wingnut Tea Party. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be of a higher class than that and found a way out so that he could keep Obamacare running.
Yeah, a class
because
issue.
He recognized it as a Republican idea.
I know. Crap. Look, it says right on the serial number, Heritage Foundation.
Yeah,
I mean, you can scrub and scrub, but it's still there. And well, and that's the problem that they have. And this is where I've often said that the best people who cope best, or at least perceive most perceptively, if you don't mind my doubling up there, of the predations of a bad boss mm-hmm. and the weirdness. I had this discussion with several of my bosses over the years. Like, how did you know that? I said, I come from I have alcoholism in my family.
Yeah, yeah.
And I recognize this immediate wild mood swing, but I also recognize denial. You know, it's that the people at the top of the party, the David Brookses and Peggy Noonans and all the rest of them, have been coping right along by pretending this shit never happens. Yeah, you know, Daddy was just very tired. Let's all have pancakes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, that's not what happened.
No, Daddy hit Mommy repeatedly and is really insane and really has a problem. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Once it gets pushed past a certain point, you can't pretend the bruises aren't there anymore.
Right.
You
right.
can't keep covering it up with pancakes and Daddy just had a bad day at work. And they have reached that level.
Absolutely.
And so now there's a bunch of children. Again, I use a family metaphor because it really is. This is human interaction. This is human nature. And really, what's more fun than human nature, to quote David Mamet? You have a group of kids in the family who are deeply, deeply in denial and can't face the fact that their parents are crazy. Mm-hmm. They belong to this awful, awful party. And I was thinking just before we started our podcast of something like a racist Turing test. You know the Turing test where you have a computer behind a screen.
And can you tell whether it's human or not?
If you can't tell if it's human or not, then it is intelligent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the intelligence test. If you put David Duke and crazy Uncle Liberty behind two screens and ask them 20 questions about race and politics and you can't tell the difference between their answers, I don't care what crazy Uncle Liberty says. He's a racist.
Yeah, yeah.
He might. It's nothing he'll ever admit. It horrifies him to think about. Every teabagger I know, I'm not a racist. I don't. Well, how come you're obsessed with welfare? How come you're obsessed with the president's color? How come you're obsessed with his birth? How come every fucking poster at your fucking rallies has Barack Obama with a bone through his nose?
Yeah.
Well, and I think Matt Taibbi had it right. Actually, is that they're not racist per se. They're incredibly narcissistic.
Yeah.
They have no idea how incredibly offensive and stupid they sound because they never talk to anybody but their own kind.
Just like so Mitt Romney.
Just like Mitt Romney.
Yep.
And so when they come out of the cave and you know, with this reek of this paranoid Bircher bullshit on them and try to play themselves off as normal people, everybody looks at them like, but you have shit in your hair.
Yeah.
So? So what? I have shit in my hair.
Yeah. Everybody all my other friends hair, have right? shit in their hair in the cave, too. You know, mm-hmm. yeah, right. And I do want to get back just for a moment to the Republican National Convention, where, despite what you might have heard on the TV, there was a big-ass fight about the rules.
Yeah,
and
was.
The fight was between Reince Priebus and John Boehner and the moneyed interests and the old power structure of the party versus the grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
And the grassroots lost the battle because John Boehner just banged the gavel and said, the ayes have it.
Yep.
And that was it. And so now the party leaders can change the rules any way they want between now and 2016. Period. They can decide that the candidate gets to pick his own delegates regardless of what happens with the primaries and the caucuses. They can just seat whoever the hell they want at the convention.
Well, it won't matter because, as everyone knows, if Barack Obama is reelected, it will be the end of America. As
oh,
we
yeah.
know.
Yeah. He's going to destroy America. So and that movie, 2016. I actually met somebody who's planning to go see that because, you know, oh, it's so scary.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like Saw, but with a Negro.
With a giant black penis, too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the scary part right there.
And it's true because he's a documentary filmmaker. Wow. And you just, you know, what can you say? Go with God, my friend.
Well, the grassroots people at the convention, though, when I was watching them on Twitter, were talking about third party. They're talking about, oh, but, you know, we're not going to stay home because Barack Obama destroy America, blah, blah, blah. But this fight isn't over within the Republican Party for the soul of the party. And it's going to be very interesting because how much more can they fail before the grassroots decides we need to go in a new direction, Driftglass.
Well, and this is where the failure of our media
really,
really matters.
It does.
Really matters.
It absolutely does.
Because as the Republican Party, you know, if you go to the Daily Beast or any other sort of daily site, you'll see that the people there all talk among themselves. They only link to themselves. They, you know, they Neil Ferguson, back to Jonathan Chait, back to whoever at Reason Magazine, back to. It's a closed loop. They only talk to themselves. And every time David Frum or Andrew Sullivan has some breathless epiphany about, oh my God, can you believe the Republican Party is full of shit? I email these people and I realize I'm just a little blogger and say, yes, I realize it. We've been saying it for 30 years. How is it you haven't noticed? And why don't you put people like us into your little circle of friends? And the reason is they want to have this fight behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Because the worst possible thing you can have, because the only thing they have in common, the brain cast of the party, the Peggy Noonans, and the base of the party, is that they all know that liberals are awful, communist, evil people. They all have that in common. They all run to, this is what Ross Douthat did. When you're in trouble, go find a hippie to blame. Go find a liberal to punch. Go find some fake centrist argument to make to get the stink of your own failure off of you. And that's why, I know I'm obsessed with this, we got to burn the center to the ground and salt the earth. You cannot be permitted any longer in the media to hide behind this centrist bullshit. And that's the big fight. I really do believe that that's the big fight in the media coming up in the next 2 or 3 years are people who, like David Gregory, who make a living keeping that wall up. I will not permit people inside the perimeter who are going to call me on my bullshit. I won't do it. And my corporation will back me on this. And then there are the people on the outside. This is what blogging used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The people on the outside who are demanding, no, what you're selling is a lie. It's an easily demonstrable lie. It's as big a lie as we're winning in Iraq. It's every bit as big and pernicious as that, but you keep selling it long after the expiration date's over because you control the fucking media. And the big fight, and this is where Meet the Press was really instructive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it really was.
Because
BB.
BB.
Don't ask BB about the bombs. Just don't ask him about the bombs at all. No.
Well, David Gregory basically tossed the keys to the prime minister of Israel.
Yeah.
And let him get away with lying as much as he wanted. He pretended to push on him, but he never asked him a single hard question. He never asked him bullshit. And then it became the Peter King show.
Yeah.
Crazy-ass pathological liar Peter King was permitted, just like Newt Gingrich's every time he comes on David Gregory's bullshit show, to just bluster and bulldoze over anyone who talked to him. And if that were like an unavoidable thing, if that were a law of nature,
yeah,
if
there was simply you could no change the channel, Driftglass, but...
I did. Down the channel, there's Tom Friedman. Holy shit, it's Tom Friedman. Why is that porn-mustached imbecile on my TV? Flip, flip, flip. Oh, my God, it's Paul Wolfowitz, yeah, the architect of the Iraq War. Why is this asshole flip, flip? Oh, my God, it's Liz Cheney. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. Every channel is some stinking, failed, neoconservative liar who, in any other profession,
all
would not
of whom
have been...
are covered with the shit of their failure and the blood of dead Arabs.
Mm-hmm. And nobody
says anything about it.
Nobody says a fucking word. And you realize behind this group of people, there is some larger element and force at work that
and by the way, they're covered with the shit of their failures and the blood of dead Arabs. And the question they're asked is, why do they hate us so much? Why is the Middle East on fire? Why are they burning our flag? Shouldn't we be doing something about that?
They're covered with the blood of dead Americans.
Yeah.
They're covered with the blood white treasury that we have. You know,
exactly.
The fact that we're broke. These people are still on television as if that never happened. And then you realize there has to be some large entity.
The Clinton surplus is in Dick Cheney's bank account now.
It is. It absolutely is. It went straight there.
Right.
And there's no one.
And it pays for Liz Cheney's St. John suits and plastic surgery. You know, mm-hmm, her eye tuck and her Botox, so that she can go on ABC News This Week and Fox News Sunday and lie.
Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have an actual right to be on there. There's no law that says you have to call up Liz Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Tom Friedman and Peter King and put them on television. This is done of their volition.
It's deliberate.
David Gregory,
absolutely,
and his bookers choose to put them on the air in ways that there's no opposition. There's no one there to ask him any hard questions. And that's the point. That's how bad our media isn't just broken. Our media has been hijacked by really bad people.
This it used to be douchebags versus collaborators. This is collaboration. That's what this is.
Straight up.
Absolutely.
And nobody's allowed inside the perimeter who will be the little kid who said the emperor's naked. They're just, and they know the emperor's naked. They goddamn well know it.
Liz Cheney's covered with blood. Why?
Why is David Gregory, why is this crazy, lying spawn of Satan on television? Why did you put her in a chair in front of a TV camera? Yeah. Oh, we have to move on. But the thing is, if you flip down the dial a little bit further, this Soledad O'Brien.
Yeah, yeah.
Who took Peter King apart. Oh, my God. This is what, instead of
She just got him to say that he didn't care about fact checkers.
Yes.
And then
it was over. She had the speeches. His apology tour. You know, Barack Obama. No, I have the speeches in my hand. The word apology, apologize, I'm sorry, never shows up in any of them. Well, you know, the logic of these speeches is clear to anyone who's a wingnut, who's an honest reader. And she just made him look like the lying sack of shit that he is. And that's the point. That's what journalists used to do. Before the David Gregorys of the world took over the political dialogue in this country and outlawed asking hard questions of the people who work for the same corporations that they do or who live down the block from them in their gated communities. We're not going to ask those people
or
those questions.
We have the same stockbroker of war stocks and treasury bonds, yeah.
And so my only question is this weekend, is it going to be Ed Gillespie or Newt Gingrich?
You want to bet about this. We'll have to figure out. I said Newt Gingrich and you said, no, Ed Gillespie is a truer blade for them. And it'll be interesting.
At this moment, Newt Gingrich, and I think, you know, Newt Gingrich is, they're saving Newt for a special occasion, but he'll be back. It doesn't matter. But
they will never play the tape in front of Newt, saying that Mitt Romney is a liar from the primary campaign.
They'll never play the tape in front of Newt where Newt Gingrich said, this woman drowning her children is an example of liberalism, which is why you have to vote Republican.
Yeah. I mean, we could go on and on and on. There is a record of him being an awful person.
Mm-hmm. And saying truly villainous, awful, evil things. And his punishment is he gets invited back on television next week by people like David Gregory. And that's why the question is always this. What are the names? What are the faces? What's the contact information of the human beings with phone numbers and email addresses.
Well, and in the end,
it's
AIPAC and the military industrial complex.
Yeah,
that's who is running everything. I mean, I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but you don't really have to be a conspiracy theorist to see where the dots connect.
No, just watch Network.
This
watch.
This is GE
Babies,
and Boeing and Northrop Grumman and AIPAC.
Watch Ned Beatty's speech from Network explaining how there are no more countries. There's only corporations.
There's only money.
And that's how the world is run.
Never bet against money. I don't want to end the show without talking about the 40 Republican senators.
Yeah.
And what they did yesterday.
This is the party of 9/11 and We Love the Troops and Purple Fingers and mocking
John Kerry
for having a Purple Heart. Because he's not really patriotic. He's not really an American. He doesn't really love this country. Remember that party? Remember those guys? Not so much anymore.
They decided to kick unemployed vets in the throat.
Yeah, they did.
And the Senate needs to be abolished, and the first person kicked out needs to be John fucking McCain.
Yeah, wheeled out.
He voted no.
As much oatmeal and as many reruns of Murder, She Wrote as he wants to watch for the rest of his miserable life, but he can't be in the Senate anymore.
Nope.
And the reason being, well, go ahead and explain what happened.
Well, no, the GOP put a bunch of stuff in the jobs bills for veterans,
mm-hmm.
and then they blocked it.
They filibustered it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a real good thing to do 47 days, excuse me. Drift class, it's 47.
Well, and that's
days before the election.
It's almost a trifecta because we managed to screw over unemployed people and veterans.
Yeah.
All in one shot.
And illustrate why we don't need a U.S. Senate. Why it's a completely broken institution. At the same time.
This is the Republican-controlled House and Senate has made it a policy.
Well, the Senate isn't Republican-controlled, but they can control it from 40 with 40 votes.
With 41 votes. That's all they need. But the Republican obstruction of this president has been a constant since day one. And now that we have reached 40-odd days before the election, and the drumbeat from the right is, well, Barack Obama just doesn't cooperate. He just doesn't want to go along with it. He's not a – you know, if you're stupid enough to believe that, you either just crawled out from under a rock or you're a Republican. Because that is, you know, I've never seen before. I've seen politicians lie before. I've seen Democrats lie before. I have never seen a political campaign that is built on nothing but lies. There's not a single true thing that these people say 24 hours a day.
And that's what I wanted to bring up. I forgot to bring that up, Drew Class.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mitt Romney doesn't want to win this election.
No, he doesn't.
and I really have come to the conclusion. I've been saying this since June, people.
You
Mitt
have.
Romney doesn't want to be president of the United States. He is running because his wife is pissed about 2008, and this is her getting her own back.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be just as bitter and disappointed in November as she was in 2008. Speaking of sister wives, there's another one who's listening in.
Yep.
And I think in his heart, he's doing it to make it easier for the next Mormon.
Yeah.
And that's also not working out very well for him. John Huntsman is not amused. So,
yeah. And you know why he doesn't want to be president? He doesn't want to have to show his tax return.
Well, he doesn't want to govern.
No.
And I don't blame him for that, but I think him sucking the energy out of, you know, trying to be as crazy as his base, let me put it that way, in order to please people about him when he really has no intention of winning is why he's going to go to hell.
Yeah. Well, and he doesn't know how to stop being a CEO.
Yeah.
And the CEO is the guy who can say
and pursuing power. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a CEO is a guy who can say or do anything he wants and just fire anybody who disagrees with him.
But he won't fire anybody. That's problem.
But they don't disagree with him. Here's the problem. CEOs that I have known many people who are in positions of hiring and firing, whether CEOs or presidents of companies or have that mentality. And they will never fire a lackey or a stooge. Or a yes
or
man.
Or somebody that's been in the office next door saying, yeah, boss, yeah, boss, yeah, boss.
They will never fire those people. They'll fire the competent people because the competent people are the ones who always have bad news for them.
Yep.
But the CEO, and I'm not talking about every corporate president. There are lots of corporate presidents who are responsible, a lot of business owners who can't, who have to be. Small business owners especially can't do this shit. They can't play these games because they run on a very thin margin. But there's a certain kind of CEO mentality that just never fails because they never – anyone who gives them bad news is fired. Anyone who disagrees with them is fired. Anytime they make an incredibly offensive racist joke or sexist joke or whatever, everybody's required to laugh at them.
Well, and I did want to say there was a poll released yesterday that showed that Barack Obama is winning among small business owners.
Yeah.
Because they want the economy fixed and they want more people in their communities to have jobs so they can buy their products, so that people in their community can buy their products.
Golly.
Gee.
Golly. What a radical idea.
I own a donut shop. I want people to come in before they go to work and buy my coffee and donuts.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that every time a factory shuts down, I have 50 fewer customers.
Yep.
Gosh, isn't that weird how the economy works? But at the CEO, at that particular kind of CEO level, there's an absolute sense of entitlement.
Yep.
Absolute sense of, I can say whatever the fuck I want. And if you disagree with me, I'll just fire you. And so you never hear any bad news.
Yeah.
You never hear anybody disagreeing with you, and your shit never stinks. And now he's in a place where he doesn't know how to cope with not being a rich dick, because that's all he is. And it's always worked for him because he could just come to the table with $250 million and say, here are my qualifications. I'm very, very, very rich.
Well, and one of the things that I think Barack Obama has done a good job with, and we need to continue in our day-to-day conversations with other people about politics, Barack Obama has salted the earth when it comes to political ads because he has no other alternative in terms of beating back the money machines that's going to buy every single minute in these swing states. Mm-hmm. You simply have to salt the earth and say, guys, I don't believe a single word I hear on any political ad, period.
Yeah.
Just don't believe it. Don't you hate – that's a good thing to bring up in a bar or at a meeting or at a – gosh, don't you hate these political ads? Aren't they awful? Aren't they just a waste of time? Don't you wish they would just ban them? And really salt the earth about that, because that Mitt Romney thinks never bet against money. I'm just going to buy the airwaves, and that's going to swing everybody to my side.
Well, and we should do that after Bill Burton, who runs the Obama PAC, hires me to do one political ad. I only want to do one.
What do you want it to say?
I want to do the, what do we really know about Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney was born Willard Romney. His father, was he a real American? Why was he hiding out from the law in Mexico? Mitt Romney belongs to a strange religious cult that he refuses to talk about, with odd beliefs and weird, weird practices. Mitt Romney made money destroying American jobs and shipping them overseas. Mitt Romney practiced socialism secretly as governor of Massachusetts. His name, by the way, is Willard Romney. And you can really go right down the list of all the things that Republicans said about Barack Obama and lied about, and make exactly the same case for Willard Romney.
Well, and I have actually overheard people on the street here in Southern Illinois who are Republicans say, well, you know, I don't, during the primary season, say, well, you know, I don't know about that Mitt Romney. He's a flip-flopper.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, blue
don't
gal.
Don't leave out the flip-flopping.
He's not just a flip-flopper. His entire life, his family, and that mysterious political religious cohort that raised him has been grooming him for president.
For decades.
Since he was a child overseas.
Wow.
What's Mitt Romney's middle name? As a child, he was known as Willard Romney. When did he change it to Mitt, and why?
All right, we're going to stop there. You can listen to our podcast for free at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. At our Facebook page, I'm Frances Langum, L-A-N-G-U-M, on Facebook. If you friend me, I'll friend you back. And I want to thank everyone who's done that this week. I had a lot of new friends this week on Facebook. We're on iTunes and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store. on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and we are on Netroots Radio from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern at netrootsradio.blogspot.com. We thank you for your contributions. We've heard from some of our listeners this week, and we're just very grateful to you. There is a PayPal button at our website. If you get an email saying that I've suspended your contributions, would you email me directly?
Yeah.
Email us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. There were a couple people that happened to, and that's a mistake. So
PayPal's getting frisky somehow.
I think there's, we talked about this before, that there was a hacking of the credit cards from, what is it, Working Assets. And I think that caused a lot of people to get their PayPal situation kicked out. So if you're facing any issues like that, just email us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com and we'll get it worked out. We're more worried about your credit card security than we are about your donation to us, but we want to make sure that everybody's happy.
We didn't reject you.
We did not reject you. That's what I want to make sure you know. Yeah. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution made out to the Professional Left Podcast at our P.O. Box. P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. And we have gotten some very lovely gifts at our P.O. Box, too. And we thank those of you that have sent us in-kind gifts. We've gotten some homemade salsa and jams and DVDs for the kids and just very, very kind, generous things in that P.O. Box. And thank you to those people who have sent us things. We appreciate you so much.
It's really kind of a highlight of not every day, but every few days that we, it's like a little magic.
We go over to the P.O. box and check it to see. And sometimes it's empty and sometimes it isn't, but sometimes there's something just so delightful in there.
It's
a nice letter.
It's such a nice little surprise.
Yeah. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Every week we post to our website and Facebook page at Internet Kitty, sent in by you, the listeners. And this week, we have two Internet Kitties. The Internet Kitties this week are named Simon and Sage. And they are just gorgeous. They just take my breath away. I mean, all the Internet Kitties are lovely. But Simon and Sage are very, very beautiful cats. If you would like to send us your Internet Kitty, feel free to do so. You send it to proleftpodcast@gmail.com. And please put in the subject line of your email, Internet Kitty, so that it doesn't get lost in the shuffle. And just so that you know, we never call it a wait list, but there is a line of succession to the throne of Internet Kittydom. So I will email you when it is your Internet Kitty's turn. No one is ever rejected from being an Internet Kitty. Oh. But there is a waiting time to which you must submit so that we can get you your week as Internet Kitty. Feel free to write us about anything. Our letter show will be coming up over Thanksgiving weekend. We will be reading your letters on the air. Be aware that if you write us at any address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties wish Reince Priebus would stop sending them his resume.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2012. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Your mic faded out when you said Driftglass.
Of course it did. Because the world is fucking with me. Damn you, technology.
All right, why don't you say this is the podcast, just for fun?
Yeah, this is why Battlestar Galactica is
fun. Come on.
No tech, no network.
Go.